Hey, so it's about 10 past three. Oh, that's loud, isn't it? Okay, so it's about 10 past three, we'll get going. My name is Paul Andrew, and I'm a product manager on the Office 365 team at Microsoft. And this afternoon, we're going to be talking about identity management in Office 365. So we'll get straight into it. There's three parts of the talk that I want to give today. The first part is an overview of identity management itself, the topic. One of the things I want to try and do with this talk is give you guys some speaking points to take back to your organizations to be able to tell others about how easy identity management is in the cloud and with Office 365. So I'll give you some simple terms to use with people, ways of thinking about identity management with Office 365 that hopefully you'll be able to use as a way of getting people up to speed. And hopefully it makes identity management simpler for people that you're talking with to understand. So this talk is intended as an overview, something to teach you about how to go and talk to others about identity management in the cloud. I'd love to get questions through the talk. We have 60 minutes together. For folks who stay to the end and ask questions, I have some gifts to give away that the local team here have given me for questions that I'll take at the end. All right, so second part, we're going to talk about a couple of features that have been recently announced from Microsoft, recently introduced in the identity management space. And then the third part of the talk is I'll walk through six specific different types of identity management that you can do with Office 365. So we'll get into a little bit more detail, maybe summarize some of the stuff that we've talked about. All right, we're ready? So we got 60 minutes, let's go. Identity management. The first thing we want to think about, what is identity management? Identity management is largely thinking about a directory. You have a directory of people somewhere, and you want to manage them. Why do you want to manage them? Because you got more than 10. If you only had 10, you'd just remember their names in your head, right? If you only had 20, maybe you'd write them down on a bit of paper. But you don't. You have a lot, so you've got to do management around them. And so what does that management mean? It means your computer systems have to be able to identify who those people are. And we call that authentication. It's like when I see someone that I know, I recognize their face. I see a few people in the audience here that I recognize. You know who they are, and you think, okay, I got it. I know who they are. Computers can't do that, so they have to use public key cryptography and private keys and signed documents and all these kind of things. So they do that authentication that way. And Office 365 takes advantage of, essentially, public key cryptography to be able to authenticate users. Authorization is the second part in identity management. So once you know who someone is, you can decide what they want to do. This is really all there is to it. Identity management is very simple. It's a directory of users. You figure out who they are and what you want them to be able to do. So to bring it a little more into the industry, identity management has a little bit of jargon around it. We've got things like single sign-on, SSO. SSO is fantastic. It means you don't have to type your password in. It means when you sign in once on your PC at the beginning of the day, that enables you to access systems all across your organization, wherever you happen to be, without re-entering your username and password. This is single sign-on. Really great stuff. Something that you come across quite often is an identity provider and a relying party, and we're going to use those terms talking about Office 365. An identity provider is where the directory is, where the identities are stored. That's where the database is, the list of names that you have. And the relying party is simply some application that wants to use those identities. It's called a relying party because it relies on the identity provider to tell the truth. It has to trust the identity provider. And then when we're talking about identity management, the connections between systems inevitably come down to something called security assertion markup language. And this is the most complicated piece of the technology. It's where the identity provider has figured out who the person is, and they have to create a signed message, which is a SAML token, a token to say, this is who this person is, and I guarantee it, and I'm going to sign that, and that's contained within this format that's called Security Assertion Markup Language, or otherwise known as SAML. Now, SAML gets really complicated really quickly if you start to look into different things that you're connecting to, but essentially that's what it is. It's about a message that comes from an identity provider, goes to a relying party, contains an assertion that says, this is who this person is, I know who they are. Microsoft has two forms of identity management. And it may seem really simple, but sometimes people do fall over these two different identity systems that Microsoft has. And one of them is for consumer services, and one of them is for business services. So the consumer services is called the Microsoft account, and most people have at least one of these. Many people have more than one. You're required to have a Microsoft account to sign into Windows Phone, to Windows 8, to Xbox Live. We use this in all of the Microsoft consumer services. The Windows Azure Active Directory, or otherwise known as an organizational account, is the type of account that we use at Microsoft for our business services. So why are they separate? Well, in our consumer services, Microsoft has some kind of contract with the user of the identity. When you sign up for Outlook.com or Hotmail, you'll see there's some terms and conditions. You're agreeing to the service that Microsoft provides. So you have effectively a business relationship with Microsoft through that click-through contract. If you sign up for Office 365, you're not actually signing up as a user. You're signing up as a company, and you're going to pay Microsoft, and you have an agreement with Microsoft, you're going to pay a subscription, but your end users don't pay that. Your end users don't have any agreement with Microsoft. Your end users are actually your responsibility. And so Microsoft does not get involved in the end users, the user accounts which are part of the organizational ID. So there's a separation of business concerns there where Microsoft is responsible for what people do on consumer services, but the organization that has subscribed to the Office 365 tenant, they own and are responsible for their own users. And so Microsoft doesn't send marketing emails to those users. We don't disable those users if they behave badly. We don't look at the data that those users create. They are the responsibility of the organization. So because of this, we keep these two systems separate. And we keep the Microsoft account, which is our consumer services, on separate systems, separate distinct parts of data centers to the organizational accounts. And Office 365 uses this organizational account, which is known as Windows Azure Active Directory. We've actually had this Windows Azure Active Directory for several years. We haven't called it out and named it before. It has only previously been available to Office 365. It's now becoming available to use for other applications, whether SaaS applications or custom applications or other Microsoft applications. So this tenant or group of organizational IDs that you might create can be reused for other things. So this is what we have in Office 365. When you have a tenant, and any user in your tenant can see all the other users in your directory, you can't see users in other directories because they're owned by some other company. You could potentially do link federation or something with them, but out of the box, they are separated into an organizational unit, which is your company. It's essentially a form of Active Directory that we are running in data centers for the purposes of business services. So coming back to Office 365, Office 365 has three primary ways that you can manage identities. The first is all of the identities are in the cloud. They're in Office 365. We call this the cloud identity. And it has no connectivity to any systems that you might have in your offices. All of the data is in the cloud, and it's managed for you by Microsoft in Windows Azure Active Directory. The second one is where you have an Active Directory in your organization, and you want to synchronize the users from that Active Directory up into the cloud. And in this case, you manage those users in your Active Directory through whatever tools you might want to use, and changes are synchronized up to the cloud. So if you're using directory synchronization, those users are not able to be changed in the cloud, so you can't make use of the user editing functionality that Office 365 has. But your users can log in. They can actually even use the same password in the cloud as they use on-premise. It's very, very simple for you to set up Office 365 if you use this mechanism. Directory sync tool is just a few minutes to set up. You run it on a member server. It runs a wizard to do that. It's great. The third one is federated identity. And federated identity is where You want the authentication request to actually happen in your servers, in your environment. So when a user logs in, you want to know that that's happened on your machines. Now, there's a few reasons why you might want to do this. We'll take a look at that. Essentially, here we've got three different architectures for doing identity management with Office 365. And depending on a customer's needs, and I'll talk a little bit more about these and help you to maybe take away a view of, for a particular customer, how would you choose? Where would you go? We have three different ways of managing identities here. So we'll get into more detail on this in a few minutes. Before that, I want to talk about some new features that we've added to identity management for Office 365. And the first one is in addition to the directory sync tool. And the DirSync tool is, it's a tool that once you have an Office 365 tenant and you're logged into the admin console, you can download this tool from the users and groups page in that admin console. And this tool's been updated recently to enable password hash synchronization. So until this update was made, many people would go all the way over to the right-hand side and want to do federation with their identity provider just because they wanted their users not to have to enter new passwords in the cloud which are potentially different or maybe the same and maybe have different rules and maybe expire at different times from their password on-premises. So without this checkbox, this is a new checkbox. The feature is this checkbox in the install wizard for the directory sync tool. Before this, and you'll hear people talk about this, DirSync did not bring passwords from on-premise up into the cloud. Why did we not bring passwords from on-premise into the cloud? Well, you don't want to transmit your passwords over the internet, right? That would be bad. We don't transmit your passwords over the internet. We take the hash out of Active Directory. Folks know that we only store a hash of passwords in Active Directory when you run your servers. We run another one-way hash on those hashes, and then we transmit that up to Windows Azure Active Directory. So when your users create their passwords, when they change their passwords, we'll transmit them up. And that way, a user logging into Office 365 is able to log in with the same password that they have on-premise. You're able to have the same password policies as you have on-premise in the cloud. And it makes for a very simple way of installing Office 365. There are still some reasons why you might want to go with federation. Identity provider federation, and I hear from a number of customers, there's if you have a particular policy or security requirement or concern or need or report requirement or whatever it may be, you may still want to do Active Directory federation services or some other kind of directory federation. So I've got a little table here, password sync and password sync now including directory synchronization. When would this be okay? When would you want to do federation with ADFS? Same password to access resources. Check, we got that with password sync now. Can control password policies on-premise. We got that with password sync. Support for two-factor authentication. Well, we're adding that. We've got that with password sync. We'll take a look at that in a minute. No password re-entry if on-premises. This means if I log into my Windows PC at the beginning of the day and I go and access resources, I don't want to re-enter my password. Now, if I'm using password sync, there's no single sign-on going on. There's no magic there. It's just synchronizing your hash up to the cloud. So you're going to have to re-enter your password. The cloud just doesn't know who you are. Client filtering by IP address or time, schedule, you can configure that with ADFS. There's no such functionality with password sync. In fact, this is a recurring theme. ADFS has additional features. If you go down here, change password available from the web, that's a feature of ADFS. Works with Forefront Identity Manager, you can do that with ADFS. Authentication occurs on-premises, can immediately block disabled accounts. Some people have audit requirements that they need auth requests to appear in their domain controller event logs. If you have that requirement, then password sync is not a great option because the auth is not logged in your on-premises domain controller. All right, so some food for thought there. So let's take a look. And I got it. So I really wanted to show a demo of what directory sync with password sync was like. We took a look at the screen. DirSync really is a wizard. It runs through 6 pages of that wizard. It installs SQL Server Express, it installs the DirSync tool. It connects to your domain controller, it looks for changes, and it sends them up to the cloud. So I've got a machine here which has the DirSync tool installed. And I've got the time here, because we're going to need that, and I've got the event log here. So what I want to show you is, if I go back to my other machine here, I've got an Office 365 tenant. And you can see my password, well, you can see dots, right? You can see my password as I type it in. And you'll see me get logged in. Okay, that's good. Okay, so I'm going to go with that same user onto my on-premise machine, because this is on-premise. I'm going to change the password. Change your password. This is just for demo purposes. So you can see my old password there. And how will you know that I've changed my password? Okay, it's a trick question. I'll make it shorter. So you go, I've changed my password. And it says your password has changed. And so the DirSync tool checks for password changes every 2 minutes. So I can see over there on the clock, it's 8:25 p.m. And actually, in the event log, I just saw that little exclamation point mean. You know what that means? There's a new event. So DirSync logs these events here. You can see it's found my password change request. I've got the logging turned up a bit here. Says there's a request to change it, and it's successfully come through. So that's great. I can go back and see if that's reflected in Office 365. So we'll just go and do another quick login. I got my new improved shorter password. You can tell when it gets to the blank screen, by the way, that it's logged in, because otherwise it's busy telling you you're no good. So there you go. I've logged in with a shorter password. Real quick, not that one. There's a brief demo of what the DirSync tool looks like with our new password hash sync. All right, so let's take a look at something else that's new, multi-factor authentication. So Microsoft is adding multi-factor authentication. This is in preview right now and can be used with Office 365 with administrative logins right now. Once we get out of the preview, it'll be possible to use this with user logins also. Why do you want a second factor of authentication? Well, your data and applications are under attack, clearly. Multi-factor authentication is valuable if you have super critical data that's important to look after. If you're concerned about advanced persistent threats from foreign nations that may be trying to hack into your systems, as we're moving to cloud-based identities and cloud-based authentication, you're no longer protected by your data center being inside of your office building. Your employees and anyone else who wants to try and guess your password can log in or attempt to log in from anywhere. So it is worth thinking about multi-factor authentication. Sometimes also companies or government agencies are required to use multiple factors of authentication or in fact just to adhere to standards that require such things as smart cards or what have you. Microsoft acquired a company last October called PhoneFactor, and we've been integrating that technology from PhoneFactor into Windows Azure Active Directory. So this is in preview as Windows Azure Multi-Factor Authentication. And it provides for a second factor of authentication. So first off, I put in my username, I put in my password. My password is something I know. My phone is something I have. That's the second factor of authentication. So you can take a phone call, you can take a text message, and you can also run a mobile app to do that. The phone call is really simple. The phone call is just, hey, we're here. Please press the pound key to log in. It's really just... a verification that you have the phone. A little while ago, I started getting phone calls from it in the middle of the night, and I thought, wait a minute, that's not me logging in. And sure enough, it was someone else in my team who happened to be using my account and trying something out that I'd shared with them, and they happened to be doing it in the middle of the night, so it woke me up and called me. But I didn't let them log in. So it was secure at least, even though I'd given these people my password. It was probably a bad idea in the first place. So anyway, there's one thing about multi-factor authentication that we have in Office 365. Now, you know, with Office 365, we have all this great web UI. We have the Outlook web app. We have SharePoint Online. We have Word and Excel web apps. We also have rich Office clients that you can run. And you get licensing with for those through Office 365. You can download them from your tenant. And they have not yet been updated for multi-factor authentication. So when you're talking about two factors of authentication and these rich client applications such as Link, Word, Excel that run on your PC don't have a second factor of authentication, we have to think, well, should we just block them and not let them connect because they are less secure because they just have your account password? Should we just let them connect anyway, but then potentially someone else could be guessing a password there, so we don't want to do that. So we have this thing called app passwords. And app passwords are something that once you have an account that's been enabled for multi-factor authentication, you can add an app password to your account. I'll show you how to do this in a minute. It is simply a 16-character randomly generated password that you only get shown once. So it's generally going to be more secure than your account password, unless you're using 16-character randomly generated passwords for your account password. It's not going to be as secure as a second factor of authentication. So this is part of our offering for Windows Azure multi-factor authentication, that these app passwords are available. So let's take a look. All right. So I'll just load my login up again. All right, so I'll log into my other tenant here. And in this tenant, I've got a whole lot of demo users. And I'm here in the Office 365 Admin Center. I'm going to go into the Users and Groups page. And by the way, you can see here where you download the DuraSync tool. Here it is here. We've added this additional one. Here's where you set up multi-factor authentication. So let's go there. And I want to set up multi-factor authentication for one of my users. So here by default, it's showing me administrative users that I can enable. I've got to go in and choose sign in allowed users. And then once I do that, I'll go and select this guy, David Longmuir, and I'm going to enable David L for multi-factor authentication. So it's giving me a warning, and we're still in preview. We're updating this text, but the warning is going to say that once you do this, this user will be required to configure multi-factor authentication, and that they'll require app passwords if they want to use rich client apps. It doesn't exactly say that right now, so don't pay any attention to the actual text. So I'm going to log out here, and then we will see what happens to David L. So prior to this, David L would have been able to just log in with his regular password. So here we come. So there's David L's password, and I've got the floating dots. So I already know that that's going to take me some time to do something about it. I've got the floating dots. It says your admin has required additional security verification, so I go, okay, that's fine. My other option, by the way, is to sign out. I can either set this up or I can sign out. And this happens the first time that you go into any of the web applications that are part of Office 365. When you're in this enabled state, by the way, a user is still able to connect with Link and Outlook and all their Office applications. Those apps are not blocked until the user has gone into a web application and basically been required to add their second factor of authentication. So I'm going to set this, and I'm going to say, call my mobile phone. You see I have a few different options here. I'll show you some more of those options in a moment. I'm going to say my mobile phone is this number here. This is actually my my desk phone. And the reason I'm not choosing my mobile phone is it's roaming and it's quite expensive. But my desk phone is a Link phone. And so all things being happy with the audio out, you'll hear that ring. Okay, so here's my desk phone ringing. It's just an ordinary Link phone, so I can answer that.
Thank you for using Microsoft's verification system. Press the pound key to finish verifying your account. Your account has been verified. Goodbye.
So obviously, Office 365 doesn't actually know that that is the phone that I happen to be carrying with me. I could be anyone at this point. All it knows is that I had my password right now, and that someone has answered that phone and pressed the pound key. You may want to have options in the future for different ways of configuring that. Some companies require an actual handout of a certificate to be made in person so that a human is verifying who the audience is. And so this initial time, we don't actually know that's the person. Certainly we know that they have that same phone the next time that they log in. All right, so it's logged me in. It's very kind. And now if I was to log in again, which I'll skip right now, then it would require that same phone to be answered and press that pound key. So in addition to that, I can go in and change my settings. I'm still logged in as David, by the way, so I'm this user. And in Office 365, I can change my password here. And in the password change screen, there is a link here to update phone numbers for my multi-factor authentication. So I've just clicked that. And this is the link through to the multi-factor authentication configuration. And I'll show you one more option that we can set up, which is use of the mobile phone app. Invariably, these demos work really well when I try them in hotel rooms with terrible internet connectivity. And then the moment you're up on a pedestal here, and does anyone have a question? The last page came up. This page has decided not to. I don't know why. Question, are we going to add support for RSA or other types of tokens or certificates or smart cards? We haven't announced anything at this point. We're certainly well aware that there are a number of different requirements around the world for those things, though. Looks like we're going to be moving on. I have a nice phone app here, which you can use that is available on iPhone and Android. I'm not going to hang around and wait for that web page to come up. And the phone app allows you to take a phone notification. So you don't have to answer a phone, press a hash key. You just get a normal app notification, and you can say, okay, or you can say, cancel, and alert us to the fact that it was some kind of fraud. All right, are there any other questions on multi-factor authentication while we're here? No? Okay. All right, a couple of other things that have come out or are coming out recently. Azure Active Directory Graph API, use of PowerShell to access our directory is pretty new and is something you should absolutely try out. We have these REST APIs for working with Windows Azure Active Directory. So these APIs allow you to effectively get the same access that our directory sync tool has. There's one downside of these APIs that our data center guys do ensure that use of these APIs does not impact any other users of Office 365. That's a lot of words for me trying to tell you that they throttle the use. So if you're using these PowerShell APIs, be aware that if you run up like 1,000 threads and run PowerShell 1,000 times, it's not going to be a lot faster than running, say, 10. We also have a connector for Windows Azure Active Directory for Forefront Identity Manager. Lots of users around the place with Forefront Identity Manager. It's a great tool for where you have lots and lots of users and policies and things that you, workflows that you have to run through. All right, so this is the third part of my talk, which is getting to the identity integration options. And who can remember the three options that I gave you right at the start? Can you remember that? What was the first one? Cloud identity, right. What was the second one? DirSync. And the third one? Federated, right. So let's go into a little more detail of those things. Now that you've learned that there's three, there's six. just for the purpose of discussion, I've got six. So I have about six slides after this to talk through each of these. Cloud identity, that was the first one we had over here on the left-hand side. So cloud identity, the point I wanted to make about that is it's really useful if you have small numbers of users. Cloud identity shows you 20 users at a time, and if you're doing something bulk with users, you can do that with up to 20 users. If you're doing that with a large numbers of users, you imagine you're going to be checking a box, doing something. You can check 20 at a time, but you can't do any more than that. You can't like check 500 or all of the users or users that adhere to a certain rule set. So cloud identity has some limitations, and it's generally expected that smaller organizations will use it. By the way, cloud identity is the only option for our small business SKUs. We have a P1 and a P2 SKU, and these SKUs are up to 25 users. They can't be extended over 25 users. These SKUs do not include access to Windows Azure Active Directory. So that means that cloud identity is the one that customers on those SKUs are using. Also, by the way, we're introducing the ability to transition from those SKUs to the larger SKUs in the next couple of months. We have an in-product transition wizard that has been released, but it doesn't have the P to M and P to E yet. That's coming before the end of the calendar year. So cloud identity is intended for those lower end. Here's a graphic of it. The directory synchronization is really simple to set up. Directory synchronization is really intended for anyone who uses Active Directory. If you have a directory in Active Directory, then we really want you to put DirSync on a server and synchronize those identities up to the cloud. They're still your identities. You still own them. Microsoft doesn't have I don't know what the right word is right now, but we don't mess with those identities. They are yours. But it gives you the easiest way for your users on Office 365 to get to the directory, to log in, and to work with their coworkers. And by adding password hash sync, it makes it a very powerful way of working. So there you go, password hash sync. Password hash sync, I showed you that demo, and that password basically synchronized right away. Now, it does that on a two-minute cycle. It's going to check every 2 minutes for password changes. DuraSync actually only checks every 3 hours for other directory attribute changes. So it's only the passwords which are synchronized every 2 minutes. It runs that lower speed synchronization as well for other directory attributes. DuraSync does a small number of write-back attributes, less than a half a dozen. And none of them are particularly interesting. Most attributes are not written back to Active Directory at all. It is basically a one-way synchronization and not something that... So editing is all turned off in the cloud. So many of you may have multiple forests in your on-premise directory. I have to tell you that makes working with Office 365 a little more complicated. The DuraSync tool, which you get from Office 365 that you download, will only work with a single resource forest. So it's a simple tool, it's easy to use, but if you have a more complicated setup, if you have multiple forests, then you're going to have to spend a bit more time looking at it. And the options that you have are using DuraSync or FIM for synchronization, because Forefront Identity Manager can also do this synchronization. You can use ADFS. Let's take a look at a small chart that I have prepared. So if you start at the top and you think about how many forests you have. If you have a single one, bam, you're out. You're okay. You can just use the DirSync tool that's directly available, and it's very simple. If you have multiple forests and you want to consolidate, we have a white paper on TechNet for consolidating forests. This is typically not what people want to do when they have multiple forests. There's some reason why you have forests. There are different geographies or there are different parts of the organization that can't merge. But if you're able to consolidate, we have a really big white paper that will help you to do that. So after consolidation, bam, you're done. We're okay. We're on to Office 365. If you don't want to consolidate you have multiple Exchange orgs, so you have Exchange servers in different forests, then we need to consolidate those. So it's just account forests that we can handle. And we have a separate version of the DirSync tool, which you can use for multiple account forest synchronization. And this tool and the Office 365 connector for Forefront Identity Manager, which supports multiple forests, are both available through Microsoft Consulting Services engagements right now. So this makes having multiple forests a lot more discussion, a lot more planning, and an MCS engagement is required at this point. So let's see. PowerShell Graph API, REST APIs. I pimped this already. I mentioned about the performance implications. So I'm going to click through here. I did mention this Forefront Identity Manager tool as well. I didn't say where you get this. This is available on Connect. If anyone's familiar with connect.microsoft.com, you can go up there, hop onto the Forefront Identity Manager site there, and you can get this connector. Forefront Identity Manager has lots of connectors for different applications. The connector for Office 365 is available up there. All right, now we're on to the number six, the far right of that table, and this is all about federated identity. So there's a few different types of federation that I want to talk about. Once you're into federated identity, and remember, we're probably doing federated identity because we want single sign-on. This is normally the largest reason people are interested in it. They're excited about not only users having the same password, but not having to type it in a lot of times. Users get really excited about not having, how many people like typing their password and typing multiple passwords, man. So single sign-on is typically the reason. I had that table showing some other reasons people want to go with federation. A number of those reasons are specific to ADFS. But let's take a look at federated identity in general. So this means not only ADFS, but other ways of doing federation. And so for Office 365, we see three broad ways of doing federation. One is ADFS. ADFS is the, from a Microsoft point of view, everything's from Microsoft. It's all from the same vendor. It's all supported through the same place. You can have typically the same technical resources set it all up who do your Office 365 work. And so this is the first one that we had available. Active Directory Federation Services. This technology was recently added into Windows Server 2012 R2. That's in preview at the moment. You can read all about that on TechNet. So ADFS is definitely something that we are continuing to invest in. It's clearly one of the important ways that we have of connecting from on-premise servers into the cloud. And so I see it as having a bright future. It's got a new release coming out shortly. It does take some time to set up. I mean, realistically, you're talking about a number of weeks for planning and deployment. We typically recommend a minimum ADFS configuration of 6 servers. We're looking at geo-redundancy in that that configuration. And so it's not a trivial thing to go and take on. So the second way that we talk about doing federation is with a third-party security token service. And we have a program called Works with Office 365 Identity, which I run out of Redmond. And in that program, we qualify third-party identity providers. And once those identity providers are qualified, we can say that Microsoft's able to support Office 365 when it's connected to or federated with a third-party identity provider. So we're working to try and add as many identity providers to that program as we can. We do want to do testing with identity providers before we recommend them to customers, and that's the purpose of that program. The third one here we have is Shibboleth. Shibboleth is used in a few places in academic, a few places around the world. I'm curious, do people familiar with use Shibboleth around here? Two guys at the back? Four. Okay, just a few. So Shibboleth is one of the open source identity providers that are used in academic circles, and I almost said it. Microsoft does not support Shibboleth, but we support Office 365 when integrated with Shibboleth. I have to say that because we can't take the calls when you're doing your Shibboleth configuration and something's not working and you need help. What we can support is Office 365 when it's connected to Shibboleth. And we do work pretty hard on those calls to make sure that the Office 365 configuration is correct, but we don't want to go debugging third-party code, so I have to catch myself when I say that. The program is to support Office and our products. So let's look at the Works with Office 365 program. It's intended to give Microsoft customers the confidence to be able to use a third-party identity provider. It does include coordinated support. Our support teams have contact details for the support teams at these third parties. Clearly, we're not going to run the whole incident and make sure you get all the way to the end with the third-party software that you're trying to work on. But we do work to ensure that you have a good experience when you're working with these things, and that using a third-party identity provider should not be a blocker for working with Office 365. So these are the identity providers that we have in the program right now. And we have I have three boxes on this slide. It shows in the top box identity providers that support two protocols, WS Trust and WS Federation. And then Tivoli in the middle there supports WS Federation and NetIQ with SAMLP. Now, when you're doing federation, Active Directory Federation Services works with WS Trust and WS Federation. And these are the protocols that Microsoft and Office 365 have the most experience with. And WS Federation is the protocol used by the Office 365 web applications. So anytime you're connecting to Office 365, the admin portal, SharePoint Online, if you're using Outlook Web Access, any of these things where it's a web browser that's at the front, we're using WS Federation. So if you drop down, Tivoli has WS Federation. We have a few other partners that we're working at testing at the moment who are going to support just WS Federation. That's the protocol that they're going to use. WS Trust and also SAMLP can also be used in that same type of authentication, which is known as passive authentication when you're doing your authentication request. So SAMLP down the bottom, that's also able to be used when you're doing a browser-based authentication. Office rich client applications use this other protocol called WS Trust. So if you're thinking about Link, connecting to Link Online, Link Server Online, if you're thinking about Word and Excel and PowerPoint, downloading documents from SharePoint Online, they're all going to need to authenticate to Office 365 using WS Trust. This also applies to SkyDrive Pro, the sync tool, if you use that sync tool for synchronizing your documents to your PC. And it also applies to the new licensing model that for Office 365 Pro Plus, which is where, as an individual user, you can install Office-rich client applications on up to five PCs when you're signed in with your Office 365 credentials, if your license includes Office 365 Pro Plus. So that licensing also requires WS Trust, which means only the identity providers in the top, ADFS, and these other guys here, are able to work with rich client applications right now. This is just a technical limitation at the moment. Clearly, all of these guys would like to do more work and improve the situation, but I just wanted to call out that's where we're at right now. Now, Shibboleth, while we're talking about rich client and web client, Shibboleth is a special case because there's an extension to Shibboleth known as ECP, which allows your identity provider to work with Outlook. So Outlook is the thing you can't live without, right? If you can get the ECP extension, which is an extension of the SAMLP protocol, that's very common with Shibboleth implementations. So Shibboleth can't use the Office 365 Pro Plus licensing, can't use Link or Word, Excel downloads from SharePoint, but you can use Outlook, and you can, of course, use all the web applications. I've got a link here to some more information about the Works with Office 365 program. Hey, so summary. What I wanted to try and do today is to give you guys information about the three different ways that you can use identity with Office 365, being cloud identities, synchronized identities, and federated identities, and hopefully give you some guidance that when you're talking to people in different environments, different scenarios, they can make a choice between which one of these that they want to pursue, which one they want to go down. We talked a little bit about the details of each one, drilling into synchronization, drilling into federation. I showed you those demos, multi-factor authentication, which mostly worked. Focus on the pieces that worked. And we looked at the DirSync tool and the event viewer. So I've got a required slide. Hey, I hope you all swiped your badges when you came in. There's some giveaways there. So I have a few minutes left. Looks like about 10 minutes left to take questions. Do people have questions? Yeah, we got one in the middle here. So the question is, if you have ADFS and you federate Office 365 with ADFS, can you do that without using DirSync? You cannot. DirSync is a prerequisite. Essentially, there's two parts to it, right? You've got to get the identities up into Office 365 so that when a user's logged on and they look at a list of users, there's something there. That's really it. If you create a new email and you hit two, there's got to be a list of users there. So we use DirSync to do that, and you would turn off password sync typically if you do that. Because you want to use the federated one. It's possible to use password sync with federated ID, a little more complicated there. But yes, DirSync is a prerequisite to federation. I'm sorry?
If you use something like
King Federate,
you don't use DirSync there?
If you use any third-party identity provider and it's federated, you have to get the identities into Office 365 first. If you have Active Directory, it's likely that you'll use DirSync. Many of those third-party tools will use Graph API and some mechanism for synchronizing identities up there. Some of them will use DirSync as part of their install and do that. So either way, they all do that as part of their install. It isn't a problem, but it is required. Hey, so that's the first of my questions. Would you like to come and get this after the talk? Well, now would be great. Any more questions? Over on the left. Okay, so the question is, you have policies to prevent people retrying different passwords over and over, and you do account lockout if that happens. So how does that work in Office 365? So specifically in Office 365, and the part of this that does this is Windows Azure Active Directory. So it's where you do your login. We protect against password cracking attempts. If any user gets a password incorrect 10 times, they're required to go through a CAPTCHA for some period after that. I'm not sure how long. I've seen people get very annoyed because they get captured over and over again logging in. But you can't brute force passwords through Office 365. And this is irrespective of the policies on premise, because in fact group policy is not synchronized. Only the identities, it's essentially the user objects, are synchronized. The group policy part of AD is not synchronized at this time. It is, in fact, a fixed set of rules. It is 10 attempts, and then you get the capture. Yes, yes. So second question, would you like to come and get one of these? More questions? There's got to be questions. Yes. Yeah. You mean a isn't it obvious? Uh-huh. It sounds like you have some debugging to do if you want to continue with that browser. It is possibly more complicated than I can visualize and do. IE7. You know, we do support Firefox and Chrome with Office 365. I mean, we support Office 365 when you're using Firefox and Chrome. I don't know what has caused the issue that you're having. Is it related to the on-premise NTLM auth that you get automatically with IE? It's not, is it? You're just seeing that you're getting more prompts than you expect when you're in Chrome. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard of that kind of thing happening before. You might be able to put some simple network traces, put Fiddler or turn on the Chrome. What's that? Oh, we don't support it. Microsoft doesn't support it. Okay. Yeah, I'd be happy to discuss it more. And that was kind of a question. So, will you want to pick up one of these? All right, more questions? No more questions? Right at the back. So yeah, with DirSync, are you able to sync part of the directory? Yes, you can sync a particular OU, or you can sync a set of user objects by a specific attribute. What we don't allow, though, is you can't sync particular attributes into Windows Azure Active Directory. But yeah, you can choose the users relatively straightforward. So my fourth question, there's a larger box there if you want to collect that at the end. If there's still more questions, I've run out of prizes, but I'd love to get more questions. No more questions. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming along. I really appreciate it.